part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time.
Oh, it's always interesting to me who uses phones, who uses laptops, who uses, you know, whatever, tablets. It's always fascinating to me. That's great. That's great. Cool. Well, thanks for joining me this morning.
Oh, it's great to be here, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I apologize for having to reschedule. You know, parental things come up every once in a while. So I just wanted to... apologize for that. My daughter had a swim meet, and sometimes the swim team is not as communicative as they should be as to when meets are supposed to be last weekend, and then it switched to this weekend. So thank you for joining me on this Sunday morning.
Yeah. No problems, man. I've got daughters trying to teach them how to swim, so I understand.
Nice. How old?
I've got a five-year-old and a 8 month year.
You're in it.
Yeah.
You are in it. Well, double thank you for joining me this morning on a Sunday morning. Let's just start off by saying that this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I am on the line with a very special guest by the name of Jack Harris Jr., correct? Junior.
Yep. Junior's nice, on there. Nice. Yeah, I guess. Sometimes I leave it off, sometimes I don't, but yeah.
Well, in the PR that was sent, you are a junior, sir, but not to me. You will always be a senior for coming onto this podcast. I appreciate you taking the time. I always like to start off by, you know, people who have Kickstarters, crowdfunding, whatever, you know, just letting people know that's what you're here for, because, you know, we're here to, you know, get you money for your project, right? Like, that's what you want. So you are currently on Kickstarter with a project called Terminus Veil, correct?
Volume one.
It's a collection, right?
Yes, it's a collection. Issue 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then we also have some character biographies, some background story details, and some extra concept work, concept artwork that's in the book as well. So, yeah.
Nice. And why don't you just give us, like, you know, this is the lame Hollywood term that I kind of always open these things up with, the elevator pitch as to what Terminus Veil is and why people should be interested in it.
Yeah, so Terminus Veil is about a private security team that gets attacked while they're transporting a new invention. Guys come down in helicopters, just start shooting at them. They're trying to figure out what's going on, and that leads into a bigger conspiracy. So it's a lot of action elements to it, a lot of mystery. If you like stuff kind of like Ghost in the Shell, that kind of technological sci-fi feel to it. So yeah, it's a good pitch, I believe.
Good encapsulation. Yeah. I mean, I was able to check out the first three issues that were provided to me, and I, you know, again, this is just like you said, it's pretty much like action oriented, kind of like I want to say also like spy thriller sort of conspiracy sort of story, right? Like that sort of thing. Like you said, Ghost in the Shell and stuff like that. It reminded me of that sort of thing. While I was checking out the PR once again, the email that I got, I saw a little blurb that said you came up with this while you were writing a rap song. Is that correct?
Yeah, man, that's correct. So, when I first went to college, I started rapping, and for most of my 20s, that's what I did. And so back in 2009, I was writing a song called Wiped Out, and I had always rapped about like superpowers and kind of comic book geeky stuff already. And so I was just thinking about, man, like, you know, this idea, this character, Dash was actually the first character I was thinking about. And so, yeah, just started jotting ideas down about it over the years, started writing more, you know, bigger world building type stuff to it. And so in 2020, I started world building it back then, and just over the decade, just adding more and more on. In 2020, I decided to come out with the book and started the production of the book itself. So yeah,
nice.
Now we're here.
That's awesome. So like in the 11 or so years that I've been doing this podcast, I think you're the first person that I've ever had on the podcast that said that they came up with an idea while writing a rap song. That's amazing to me. That's fantastic. So I don't want to divert too much from, you know, what the actual book is, but you know, I have to say, like, where can people find, your music, like, online? Is it available anywhere? Is like, did you release stuff or?
I did release stuff. There's an album on, I believe it might still be on Spotify. It's been a while. Like I, when I was doing it, but Digital Atlanta is the name of it. And it's me and two good friends of mine. We're all a group in there. And yeah, we released that. It should be on Spotify. It should be still. I know you can find it on YouTube if you search Digital Atlanta.
So it would be Digital Atlanta, right? That's yep. And what was your handle? I mean, was it Jack Harris
was L Dash.
That's awesome. That's great. That's fantastic. So, I mean, you had said 2009, just, you know, who were some of your favorite performers? Like, I mean, that influenced you as far as like rap is concerned. Or I always kind of put like rap and hip hop together. I may incorrectly do that. Maybe that, you know, they're two separate genres of music. But like, who were some of your influences when you were doing that?
Oh man, yeah, I was at the time I was listening to a lot of Jay-Z, a lot of Lil Wayne, T.I. All of those artists were people I was listening to. But overall, man, I overall just love the genre of rap. And there's so many rappers I can tell you I've listened to or you know what I mean, just got moved by. So man, it's a lot. Young Jeezy, Gucci Mane, of course.
Good. That's great. No, I grew up in the 80s, so for me it was mostly like Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, like, you know, Beastie Boys, stuff like that. Like, so those are the people who I grew up with and kind of like loved, you know. I'm old. What can I say?
No, man. I listen to, I still mess with some Run DMC. You know, the early Nas, Illmatic, you know, early 90s stuff too.
That's awesome. So I guess my question to you too is like, I mean, if you're writing a rap song, how does that develop into the idea for like a comic book? You know what I mean? Like, were you just like riffing on an idea and for a song that was like, you know, because obviously rap, hip hop, all that stuff is storytelling based, right? Like it's very, you know, even more so than like lyrical music at times, right? I would say. Right. And so like when you were you just like writing a hip hop song about like espionage, like agents or something like that? Like how is it going for you?
No. The song actually is kind of more of like a party song. When I first came up with the idea, I think the song's called Wiped Out. But so it was more party-ish than, you know, for a kind of a club song for that style of rap. But it really was just riffing on an idea. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, I loved comic books, so I've always read comics. So it wasn't anything far for me to actually do a, like, you know, a comic book, because like I've always loved it. But yeah, it was just riffing on this idea, man, that, you know, when it first hit me, the character of Dash and what he would go through, I just started adding on to it. So
nice. And so like, when did you necessarily, because I mean, that's so funny, because growing up when I was young, I mean, obviously, like, you know, if you were into comics, you weren't necessarily into music, right? Like, or if you were into music, you weren't like comics were considered like a nerd thing and stuff like that. How did you get exposed to like comic books? Like, what was your first exposure to that? You know, because I mean, you sound like you might be a little younger than me. So things might have, you know, things might have changed like throughout the years. Like obviously now everyone's like, oh my God, Marvel movies and DC, and what are they going to do? And for God's sake, they're making a movie out of Blue Beetle, which is like, what? you know, that's a character that I never, but I mean, when you were growing up, like what were some of the things that like, you know, how did you get exposed to comics, I guess, is the direct question.
Yeah. So my dad used to buy me comics when I was maybe like 5 or 6, uh-huh. 7. Like he'd give me stuff like Silver Surfer and X-Men.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Just I don't know what took him to the comic book store, but he just would drop them off with me. And so like I, you know, read them here and there. And then, you know, once I moved, my family moved to Georgia, basically Decatur, right outside of Atlanta. Mm. And I was about 9 years old, and there was a comic book store that was right next to the mall that was close to our house. And so, you know, I would just stop in there, and I started reading stuff that I probably shouldn't have been reading at 10 or 11, but like Wildcats and Drifter, all the Image
stuff.
Image
kind
of stuff. Yeah, man. So,
yeah. With the boobs, I just started... and the butts. And the... Yeah.
Gen 13, all of that Wentworth.
Yeah, Gen 13 was a good book. Gen 13 was a good book. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so that's what started it. Me and my cousin, he was a big comic book fan as well. So we get on the phone and just talk and think about characters and, you know, make our own little books. And, man, that was how I was exposed to it, man. You know, I've always been, you know, pretty much a geek at heart. I always, you know, I love rapping. I love just overall hip hop culture. But I'm a geek at heart, man. Anime, cartoons, all the X-Men animated series, Spider-Man. Like I watched all of that stuff like 10 times over, man. Like,
oh, that's great.
That's
awesome. That's awesome. I mean, you mentioned Ghost in the Shell, obviously, earlier. Is that something you were exposed to as well?
Yeah. Ghost in the Shell. In the early 2000s, I really started watching a lot of anime. Naruto, Bleach, Ghost in the Shell, Full Metal Alchemist, all this stuff, man. I just loved it. Ghost in the Shell was something I'd go to sleep on the couch after I wrote a rap song. Just go to sleep and just watch it. And man, it was a real fun time, man. It's one of those that animes that I just love. The first, the artwork of it is always really, really beautiful, intricate, but then, you know, I love the political part of Ghost in the Shell too, that there's always kind of these government agencies kind of working in the shadows and stuff like that. Just one of those things that really, really influenced me when I created Terminus Veil.
That's interesting, because recently, I mean, within the past year or so, I bought them on Blu-ray, right? Like Ghost in the Shell, because I was probably, I mean, I knew about it. I'd seen the movie in the theater, the original movie in the theater, maybe like a sequel or something. I'd been kind of like, okay, this isn't quite like Akira, but it's really, you know, it's good. Like it's different. And yeah. I'm sure you've seen the movie. It's very,
yes.
I mean, it's. I don't know if it holds up is what I'm saying. Like I recently, like before, right before the pandemic, had some friends over to watch the original movie, and we were all just like, oh, that was weirder than we remember it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then, so I recently bought the series on Blu-ray because I was like, I'm a big fan of like old anime. Like I'm a big fan of more of the like painterly stuff, you know what I'm saying, as opposed to like what now everything is computer generated and, you know, done with whatever Photoshop or 3D or like, you know what I'm saying. And so I appreciate that, and Ghost in the Shell isn't quite that, but I just wanted to like get familiar with it because it was something that when it was on TV, I guess I just didn't have cable or like, you know, get a chance to watch it. And it's funny that you mention it, the political stuff, because like, again, the podcast is called Part-Time Fanboy. I don't always have time to watch or absorb all the things that I want to. So like for Ghost in the Shell, it's like put in an episode, maybe a week and a half later, I'll get to the next episode. And so for me, it's been like really hard to like keep up with like the political and the intricacies of it. And I'm like, what is going on?
you know what I mean? You have to be tuned in to like see all the little stuff that's going on it. Yeah, man, it's definitely really detailed. I mean, I love the individual 11 storyline, and I mean, it's overall really good, man. I mean, if you get through Ghost in the Shell SAC, then I think you'll really like it, man.
Okay, cool. The thing that I discovered recently, I think it was kind of like one of the recent remakes, was it's called Arise or something.
Okay, yeah, Arise. That's on Netflix.
out of control. Like,
yeah.
I was just like, wow, that this was like, it just blew me away. And again, I didn't have time to follow up with it because of like all the other things I'm doing. But yes. That's cool that Ghost in the Shell is something that influenced you. And I love that it's like, you know, the old Image stuff and stuff like that. I mean, it's, I was heavy into those, you know, Wildcats and all that Jim Lee stuff too when it first came out. And then as the books kind of like kept coming out, I was like, maybe these stories aren't so like, you know what I mean? Like they didn't necessarily hold up for me, but, yeah, no, that's great. So I guess I kind of what I'd like to go back to as well is like, and I know I asked this a little bit earlier, how does a song develop into an idea for a comic? You know what I'm saying? Right. 'Cause like you said earlier, like your song, wasn't even necessary. It didn't have to do with espionage. It didn't have to do with like agents in the night or black helicopters or like that sort of thing.
No.
It was something completely different. How does it evolve into what you have now? And it sounds like it took a very long time. I mean, you said you have kids and stuff. And so I understand that. Again, that's why it's called Part-Time Fanboy. So, I mean, what? How did like it evolve from a song into the comic that you have now, which is like an action-packed, you know, conspiracy, a little bit of sci-fi, a little bit of everything. So how did that work?
Yeah, so the character Dash is the first character from Terminus Veil. He's the first character that I, you know, let's just say epiphany idea I had while I was in the middle of the song. I was, you know, my rap handle was L Dash, so obviously it was like a version of me that was this kind of hero that, you know, was fighting people, you know, taking down bad guys, stuff like that. I don't want to get into the what I truly visualize for Dash because that plays into a part of the mystery of the story. But yeah, he was the first character that I came up with. And from there it was just like, all right, what's the plot around this? What's this world that Dash, this hero, is going through? And from there it was me thinking of other characters, thinking of the kind of main antagonist that he'd be going against, and then just again building onto the world. Like I knew it was going to have futuristic tech, so it was going to be, you know, weapons that seemed futuristic, the kind of, again, paramilitary, just that's just the kind of stuff that I like. I'm a huge action fan, so I knew it was going to be a book about action and kind of espionage as well. So it was just me just knowing the things I like, coming up with a kind of an original character that I thought, you know, could progress through this kind of this large plot, this large epic. And just adding on to that epic, man. And that's, you know, that's probably the best way I can explain it without being like, and this is what Dash is.
Well, like for me, it's like, at what point were you like, this, I should make this a comic? Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, did you finish the song? Did you release the song? Is it on, is the song, the original song on Spotify? Is that one of the things that you
wiped out? I don't think it's on Spotify because it was right when I was really about to stop rapping.
Okay.
So I don't think it's released, but, I mean, yeah, if you want to hear it, man, I could find it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Send it to me. I mean, unless it's like spoiler filled, because I mean, that is something that.
Not.
That is something that I would link to. I would be like, hey, this is the song that inspired the comic. Like, you know, it may not be exactly the same, but like that, I would love to hear that. Yeah. Email me that.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Will do, man.
That's great. That's cool. That's cool. So how did you go about world building? Right. Because I mean, obviously a song is a song, right?
Right.
Was this something, because again, you know, I live in Los Angeles, so, you know, a lot of people that I interview are people who are like, hey, I had a TV show or I had a movie, you know, and it's just really hard to get a movie or TV show made. So I decided to make a comic. Were you trying to make this into a movie or TV show at some point? Or were you just like, hey, I want to make a comic because of your history of like being involved or in geekdom, let's just say?
Yeah. No, I knew I wanted to make a comic even before I started rapping. You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
just
really? Even before you started? Oh, because you were making comics with your cousin, right? You said?
Just having as a fun. Like, I thought that's what my before I went to school or to college, as I said, I thought making comics was going to be what I would do for
join the club.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, you get the whole, hey, career building, and I end up being pretty good at programming.
Nice.
I've been computer programmer has been, you know, mainly what I went to school for in my job now. But
nice.
But yeah, man, you know, just I've always had that. I wanted to produce art, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And I guess rapping was just an extension of that to me. But, you know, I always wanted to do a comic. When I came up with the idea, I originally came up with when I was first writing Dash and coming up with the world of Terminusville, you know, I was thinking either a comic or a game. Mm-hmm. Was what I was really thinking about. A movie, you know, animated TV show, like that would be cool.
Yeah.
But I've never been like, oh, that's what this is going to be. Like, no, like I knew a comic was something that I could do, you know, mm-hmm. I could produce. It would be, it wouldn't be such a big goal, but it would still be something that would, you know, like I said, let me express my artistic side.
Yeah. So were you into art as well? Like, did you draw, or was it just writing was the thing that you were into?
I was more into drawing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then as I started, you know, rapping, I started getting used to writing a lot. And so I kind of found out drawing wasn't as good. You know, I wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
As far as penmanship and hand work. But, you know, like, so I thought writing was just a better fit for me to be a part of the creative process.
Sure, sure. Do you still like draw though? Like, because that's kind of like, you know, like, I mean,
I sketch here and there.
Sure.
Just to get something out, but nothing I'd ever show anybody.
It's just now I want to see
step
it.
Away,
share it
one
with
step
me,
away
Jack.
From stick figures.
I
yeah,
want to
step
see
away.
It. I love seeing people's art. I love, I've interviewed a lot of people who started, you know, they were like artists and they were like, well, I wanted to make a comic, you know, and they found other artists. And there are also people who have made, you know, their own comics and maybe, you know, their art isn't like, you know, Jim Lee or whatever, or
right.
The type of thing that you have in your book, right? Really well polished, you know, stuff. But I love to see that anyway. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I'm also an artist and I like to draw, but you know, comics are not my bread and butter. You know what I'm saying? So like, I love seeing other people's art. I love, you know, and to me, what's even really impressive too, is when somebody who isn't like super great, like on the art side, even is just like, you know what, I'm just going to put my comic out there. And I'm like, you go, like, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I would love to see that stuff because, you know, it's just always fun to see people's art. So I guess when you were creating the book and you're like, okay, I'm going to make this a comic book, how many gears in your brain did you have to shift to do that? Because obviously writing music and songs, you know, is very, that, you know, that's sort of a conversation
very
that I've
different.
Had. Yeah. I've had with a lot of people too, who are like, oh, you know, I was a screenwriter and then I needed to write comic books. And, you know, for some people it's kind of hard. They're like, oh, I like panel one, like what? And then here's the dialogue for that. Like it's a completely different breakdown. What did you have to do for yourself to be able to change your ideas into comic book form?
Yeah. So like the first thing I did when I knew I was going to write the book, and that was, I would say probably about 2019, 2020, when I was like, all right, it's time to get it going. I went and got a couple of books just on creating comic books. I got Stan, he's got a book on it. And so I was like, hey, I got to read it. Got to see what Stan
thinks. Sure, sure.
Right. But then there's another one that's more kind of a classical type of book. I think it's written by a college professor. I can't remember, but I just read through those and like made sure I was like, all right, you know, I want to make sure I knew the format, and the kind of the lingo when speaking to artists before I even went down the road. And, you know, from there, it was really just, all right, we got to do script one, make a page outline, you know, go page by page, panel by panel. Yeah, man.
How hard was it for you? Like, I mean, was it very challenging?
It was different. And I think it definitely is a switching gears, but I didn't feel like it was, you know, there's a point where it was just flowing. And it was just like, all right, like, you know, like I get it now. I get how to what you're trying to achieve. I still feel like there's a thousand things I can learn and get better at. But
Sure.
now I've wrote in four scripts. You know, three of the books are fully out. One of them's almost out. So it feels a bit different now. Like beforehand, it was a little daunting, and now I could think about it and be like, could I write a 150 page graphic novel? Like, sure. Like, yeah, I think I can. Yeah, I mean, like, it's like nothing seems there's nothing about the page count or anything like that that seems daunting. Like beforehand, the idea that I was gonna write, 100 pages or something before I started was like, man, I don't know. Like, I just can I get to 20, right? but now, man, yeah, it feels a lot different. So it's definitely a switch in gears, but it wasn't as daunting, I think, as if anybody was trying to get into it. I don't think it's anything that, if you want to get into it, I think you can.
Sure. What about like the fully fleshed world aspect of it? You know what I'm saying? Or the espionage, sort of conspiracy stuff. Like, obviously, when you're constructing a story like that, or a world, or a mystery, or things like that, that can be a lot more challenging than, anything else. Like, just writing. I mean, obviously, writing anything is a challenge, but particularly if you are writing the sort of thing that you've created, which is, an espionage thriller sort of thing, action oriented. Obviously, there's beats that you have to go through and things like that, and character construction. What Was there a lot of challenge in constructing that and keeping the pacing going, and keeping things mysterious, blah, blah, blah? How did you find that to be, challenging or not challenging?
Yeah, no, that part is challenging because I've got a ton of events, over the, I would say the stuff that I really was doing, from 2009 to, let's say, to 2019, we'll just say, was really just events, coming up with events and what characters were involved in those events, and then, kind of fleshing out those characters. So when I got to writing the script, it really was, all right, how do you just, like you said, it's about pacing and beat at that time. Like, I don't want to, you want to be true to what the book is about, and the themes, to me are always, action and kind of having diverse characters, and like, those are the things that I always want to make sure I'm sticking to. But the espionage events and kind of what the bigger parts of the conspiracy are, a lot of that stuff is the place I'm at now. A lot of that stuff is done, so I just have to make sure I pace it out right. So it is a challenge. I mean, the way I try to do things, again, like I said, stay true to the action, but also give you guys some, give people some insight on what is going on behind the scenes, a little bit of exposition here and there, because it is a world, and you do want to, how do you build that mystery? Well, you have to tell something about the world, which I think issue two really gets into a lot, which is, more of the, well, why are these people attacking, taking inventions, and what are happening in these attacks, and who's kind of behind it. Like, we try to get into that. I should say, I tried to get into that more in issue two, and yeah, it's hard to explain how I pace. I just kind of get a feel from, what I think is right, but yeah. I guess that's the best answer.
Sure,
I know it's
sure.
kind of a halfway answer, but.
No. I mean, I guess the other thing too is, like, I mean, we mentioned Ghost in the Shell and some anime and stuff. Were there movies, like things, books, anything that you pulled from that sort of like influenced you in a way? I mean, obviously, just even looking at this some of the cover images, yeah, I get the Ghost in the Shell stuff, but as far as like thrillers, action movies, conspiracy stuff, like what are some of your favorites? What are things that you pulled from? I mean, was it
Oh
just like Ghost in the Shell or other things as well?
no, man. I mean, if there are books and that I would say I get pacing from, man, it would be, I don't know if it's a book, but a movie that I would say that I put in there as far as the action, the gold standard of what I would like to achieve would be Captain America: Winter Soldier.
Oh, nice.
Oh, you
Cool.
know what I mean? Which is, hey, can we have that? The action is, it's always fast. There's going to be some fun banter here and there, but then there's also going to be that kind of, there's stuff going on in the background and you're getting exposed to it. And, you know, maybe you got exposed to just a piece of it here. And then that plays into what'll be in volume two or what'll be in volume three. And it'll get expanded upon. So it's like, you know, there are the things that you're setting up that, you know, bring more color to the whole world. But there's also just the, hey, we got to, you know, we got to have some guys fighting, right?
Sure. Absolutely. Are you a fan of like 70s espionage stuff, like 3 Days of the Condor or like, well, All the President's Men is more historical, like stuff like that, the Parallax View, or have you seen any of those movies?
I haven't seen the ones in the 70s. If there was a movie that I'm probably more closer to the con manish espionage type am on the fully political ones, but like there's stuff like The Sting that I absolutely
such
love.
A good movie. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's a show that used to be on AMC that was all about con men. I can't think of it now.
What was it? I'm blanking out.
It used to come out in 2001 around 2000. That I absolutely just
There was a show called Burn Notice. I don't know if that.
I love Burn Notice.
Yeah,
that's
I've never
show.
Really seen yeah. it though. I've always wanted to check it out. Is that a good show?
It's a pretty good show. I mean, it's a USA show. It is a good show. I love it.
Yeah,
like I've seen all 7 seasons 4 times, bro.
Oh, really? Wow.
Bro, I love it.
You must like it.
But I won't tell anybody, like, is it the greatest show ever? Like, no, it's not a greatest show, but I love the, you know, somebody's got, look at my right hand, there's something going on in my left type deals. You know, all of that kind of, hey, look over here while something else is being set up. So I really draw from stuff like that. I mean, Burn Notice is, it's funny you brought it up because, man, I love Burn Notice.
Nice. Now, well, I will make some recommendations. I will say that 3 Days of the Condor is excellent. It's a Robert Redford movie. It's very good.
Okay.
The Parallax View, I think that's Warren Beatty. That's another good like government kind of like conspiracy thing. Again, these things are older, so maybe the pacing might not be like, you know, what you're into. Sort of All the President's Men is about the Watergate scandal, and it's fantastic. And then there is another one. 7 Days in May is a really great movie about like sort of like it's with Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster. It's old, it's black and white. I don't know if that turns you off in any way, but it is about a conspiracy to overturn the United States government like from within. Okay. And it's excellent. I mean, I love it. It's like one of my favorite movies of all time. And then there is, I don't know, have you ever seen the original Manchurian Candidate?
No, I haven't.
So it's a good movie. There's some hokey stuff in there. Like there's a little bit of a romancing. It's like Frank Sinatra. But if you were going to watch anything, Angela Lansbury, you remember her from like Murder, She Wrote and like all that stuff.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And you know, Beauty and the Beast. She's in that movie and her performance is crazy. You are going to be like, this is the teacup from Beauty and the Beast. Like you will be like, but I would... Like the Manchurian Candidate is like one of my favorite movies of all time. It's just again, there's a couple of things in there with like romance in there that are a little even for that era. And I love movies. If anyone's ever listened to this podcast, I love Turner Classic Movies. We talk about old movies, and the Manchurian Candidate is like, you have to forgive some stuff because it's old. Like Frank Sinatra gets into a karate fight and it's just like, dude, you don't know karate. Like, you know what I mean? Honestly, like if you were going to watch anything for the content, like I would recommend those movies. They are so, so good. But now I'm going to have to check out Burn Notice because it's something that's been like up there. And I've been like, do I have time to watch like 7 seasons of a TV show?
Man, it's a commitment.
Yeah.
But it's good because this agent, I mean, he basically gets burned. That's how it starts. And this whole time he's, you know, he's got to live with his mom. Like he's used to being in the CIA and doing all, you know, kind of the fine wine dine type stuff that, you know, agents do all across the world. Now he's kind of broke back living with his mom type of deal. And so he goes through a whole process of just kind of doing odd jobs. And, but it ends up being kind of the reason why he gets burned and all that. It ends up being really intricate, really detailed, and it it ends awesome. So.
Oh, cool. I will have to check that out. But that sounds, yeah, I'm always looking for something new, and there's just so much content, and you just get like, I'm trying to catch up with Black Mirror right now. And it's just like, when do I have the time to watch? I mean, I just got to see Guardians of the Galaxy 3 this week. So I'm just like,
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, it's really good. It's a bit overstuffed and stuff. Like there's a lot, it's like 2.5 hours. There's a lot of stuff in there, but you can tell like James Gunn was like, this is my last one. I had like all these ideas. You know what I mean? I got to stuff them in this one movie, but by the end, it really sticks the landing. I think you'll enjoy it if you get a chance to see it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to see it. Just busy, man. It's like you said, it's so much.
Yeah, and you've got two kids. You're in it right now. So yeah, I totally understand. So what about the team aspect of the book? Because that must even be more challenging, right? Like we were talking about, you were talking about Burn Notice, and I think that that's just like one guy, right? Like kind of like James Bond sort of thing. What made you want to create a team? Because a team is a lot of characters to juggle around and deal with, right? And in creating the narrative, why not just like one secret agent? Why not just like one badass dude or lady, you know, and just have that? Why not make it easier on yourself? What is it about the team aspect of the book that you wanted to do?
Well, I thought that a lot of the characters that are in Terminus Vale, I want them to grow and really become kind of that badass, like more than just, hey, there was this guy who's a badass all the way through and through. It was more like, hey, what if you took somebody who wasn't, you know, fully the best fighter or wasn't fully the best operative in the field, and they had to go through all these challenges. I thought it would be better with a team to kind of tell a story like that, because with the teams, you get to have people who excel at, you know, one thing, but then they're not, you know, like Bird, for example, and you know, she's really awesome in the field. She's really awesome operative, like a sniper. She knows how to handle herself. She knows how to direct the team when they are getting pressed. But as a person, she's not like anybody's friend. She's kind of just, you know, she's not adding on anything to them, you know. What I mean, so there's, you know, you get with a team, you get to have these, well, they're really good at this, but then they're okay at that, and you get to create all that kind of the interesting situations and dialogue along the way, and so that's kind of why I went with the team aspect. They're going to be parts of the book. You know, I know I'm going to at least issue 10. The way I have it envisioned, I would love to go to issue 50 one day.
Wow.
If I could. Right. Like that's the kind of, you know, the depth I have for the world. So I just felt like a team would do a really good job of being able to create some conflicts, being able to create some interesting situations, as well as show growth across all the characters. And just that it's hard to make one, you know, how does Bond become even more of a badass?
Yeah.
By movie 10, it's like, well, he's just always a badass, right? But it's
sure.
To watch somebody progress is really the fun of an epic to me, I think.
Sure, sure. And did you, for like each character on the team, did you write like full on histories and like backgrounds and stuff like that for yourself? Were you like fully like, what was that?
For the most part, most of the characters do have a lot of events they've had in the past, a lot of events that will be in the future, we know, come up in issues. So there's a good bit, not for every character. It will change. Character roster will kind of be, I don't want to say fluid, but as the book goes through different events, there'll be different kind of cast around it. That's how I foresee it, you know. But yeah, no, it's a team. I just felt like, again, you get to see a lot of different types of people, and you get the conflict that different personalities can bring. I think it's just fun to write.
Nice. That's cool. So you said like you want to write up until 50. Do you have like some crazy like George Lucas outline, like where you're going to take it, like in 50 issues? Have you plotted that out? Do you know the ins and outs of everything? Or like, I mean, have you written out 10 issues at this point? Is that what you've got written out?
I've got the arc written out for 10 issues. I don't have script for 10.
Okay.
I'm still actually going through the script for 5. But when I write 5, I'll be writing 5, kind of 6, 7, and 8, kind of all together. I'm just really putting all the key, events together. Like all of the key events are pretty much written out. Now it's just, all right, how do I put that all in?
Sure.
100 pages or 120 pages. So I'm still deciding some of that stuff, but long run wise, yeah, like I have the scripts for everything? No, but I've got enough key events and I've written enough of the script that I understand kind of what it's going to pace out, how it's going to feel.
Sure. The thing that I noticed in the 3 issues, obviously, is that you have 3 different artists doing each chapter. Is that by design? Was it by necessity? Was it is that something that you wanted to do? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, that it wasn't something I wanted to do originally. I felt like, I wanted to have one artist and go as long as I could.
Yeah.
You know, I reached out to Jordan, and he worked on Jordan Gunderson. He worked on issue 1, and I knew I was catching him kind of, he was in between some projects. We thought we were going to be able to execute on, 2 to 3 issues that he would be able to do is what we were originally thinking, but it, timetables kind of changed and we ended up getting, just issue 1 with him. And from there I was like, all right, well, got to pivot. And so, found, the artist for issue 2, put that team together, got it done. And kind of as I was going through that process, I learned a lot about production that Jordan had kind of Jordan did a really good job the first issue. He was such a professional, and I didn't realize how much of a professional I needed to be as a editor coming into issue 2, I'd say.
Oh, interesting.
And so I still feel good about issue 2, but then there are some things if I could go back, I'd definitely change one of those. Hey, you're learning how to produce books.
Yeah.
Type of thing. And then issue 3, we got Scott Oakley, and he did pretty good for us. I think I knew he had some projects that he was working on as well. And so I knew it was going to be, at that point, I'd already pivoted a couple of times. So I was like, I don't think it's going to hurt to pivot on issue 4. And we, went with Illustrabox Studios. That's Delio Diaz, Frank Alpizar, and they're just phenomenal. And they, from what I, our deal now is they'll be doing issue 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 if everything goes right. That's the plan.
But, oh wow! Okay.
I do recognize though it's a business and people's things change, so.
No. Sure.
I'm going to stay flexible, but I do love all the art they're doing now. So I think we'll be doing a lot,
It was interesting to me because, there's a lot of people who sometimes are like, when you were reading comics whenever, and they were like, John Byrne's not drawing this, or George Perez left for an issue, and you're just like, there's another artist. Like, what am I, continuity and stuff like that. But, as I was reading it, I was like, this might be, whether it was intentional or not, like I was like, oh, this could be interesting. You know what I mean? If you have like a different artist approaching each issue differently, then, I was like, oh, this is kind of like a unique experiment if this is what they're going for, but it sounds like you want to, after what, issue 4, kind of like maintain with the same artist, right?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm not going to, sit on it. Meaning like me and Illustrabox see differently issue 7 or 8 or something, like, sure. I'm not going to just be like, all right, it's done. Like, no, we're going to keep going and keep pushing. I think I know where I am as a creator, and I'm still very green.
Uh-huh.
And so I know the process to this book is going to be a little bit, you know, it's going to be some growth to the book. Like I'm fully prepared for that part of it. So
sure.
But no, I would love to just, you know, have one artist. I'm a big on consistency myself. Like I like to be able to know that at least you're going to get a stretch of an art, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
With the same artist, and that's what I, you know, that's what I aim to do.
Yeah.
Well,
at least for me, I was like, I mean, when I got to the second issue, I was like, oh, this is different. But for me, I was like, oh, this is kind of like an interesting take, like an experiment,
right,
like seeing different artists take. And I was wondering if that, obviously, you know, I've been around long enough to know the realities of comics where it's like an artist can't finish. I mean, I've tried to work on projects with people and it's just like my day job, my family life, you know, it's like, I can't, you know, even on my own, like little project, you know, on the side, yeah, it's hard to find the time to like sit and draw, you know? So obviously you have to find people who, you know, can do that. You know what I'm saying? So I understand the realities of comics, but for me, it was like, obviously it sounds like, okay, this was a bit more out of necessity to keep the book going. But again, for me, it didn't throw me off too much after the second issue. I was like, wait, is there going to be a different artist on the third issue? And once I got to that, I was like, oh, this is interesting. I mean, it's a completely, yeah, there are three completely different, you know, visual styles. Yeah. But again, yes, I was like, oh, this could be, you know, like interesting in a way. So it didn't throw me off. And yeah, I'm kind of like, okay, well that works. I mean, and then if you're able to keep a regular artist, sure. But there was a part of me too that was like, oh, that's interesting. You know what I mean? It didn't, you know, blow me up.
It's,
you know,
it's fun though, man. Like there's some fun. There's some fun to it. Cause you get this, I mean, there's some things that I do like that it happened. And one was that I got to see a lot of different takes on the characters.
Yeah.
We try to keep things at least consistent by, you know, giving a character kind of page right at the beginning. So,
sure,
you know, everybody knows like, hey, all right, we know the art style's changed a little bit. And then I also want to, you know, I'm not a person that wants to ever tell artists to be like, hey, like it's got to look exactly like the last guy. Like, I'm like,
sure,
no, what you feel is best. Like,
be George Perez. Like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just want them to, you know, any artist I work with, I'm always going to tell them, hey, do it your style and make it your own.
Sure.
And then we'll kind of adapt the story to it. But yeah, no, it has its fun points of being able to work with different artists, and it definitely gave me a lot of, it's like, really good on the job training, because you're working with different artists. There are different things for different people,
yeah,
the way you manage and all that. So it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also like happy accidents. That's what art is, right? Like,
yeah,
I mean, that is like the conversation now is all this AI. Is AI going to take over? Is AI going to, and quite honestly, there's probably some truth to that. But the thing is in like in great art, there are happy accidents. You know what I mean? And those things can create like genius and brilliance, you know, especially if you go back and you look at old comic book art, like that was just done on a page. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you see all these, like this white correction stuff and this white, and it's just like, oh wow. You know, like there were accidents, there were things, and then, you know, having to make things better. So, yeah, I mean, I think it kind of works. I mean, for me, I was just like, at first I was kind of like, oh, okay, there's a new artist. And then by the third issue, I was like, okay, is it going to be a different artist? Like, and I was like, oh, okay, kind of cool. Like, so, you know, it didn't put me off at all, like, is what I'm saying. Like, at first I was kind of like, oh, okay, this is different. So, but that's the thing, that leads me to another question. What were some of the biggest things that you learned doing this? I mean, if you had to go between artist and artist, one of the first things you probably learned was artists are sensitive, right? Like that was probably one of the first things. But I mean, what were some of the big eye openers in like producing a comic book for yourself?
Yeah, I think it's the speed, and you know, I was trying to get a gauge of how long something takes, right? Like I can draw, you know, to, again, some stick figures, right? I can draw my little sketches, but like, I don't have, you know, a good timetable estimate of, okay, if I ask you to draw a page, does that take you 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours, two
sure.
days, 2 weeks, right? So I think that was probably the most eye-opening part of it was, you know, understanding the what the pace for, you know, one artist is not the same pace for another, but yet they're still kind of the same, you know, deadlines and stuff like that that you're trying to have, right?
Yeah.
But you know, other than that, I think it was, you know, challenging, getting used to challenging artists when you see something a particular way, right? Like, but it's kind of worse with the you know, hey, I have some panels. I say it's five, then you get back six, and you're like, well, the artist's like, hey, I thought we should do this, and it's like, okay, so you know, like you have to know when to be open to that, but then also know like, no, I kind of need it this way in particular this one time, just because of what it sets up for issue three that, you know, the artist might not be taken into consideration. So it's stuff like that that you know trying to find a good vibe and a good because you want to communicate about all the sequentials, but then at the same time you want to give the artist their space to be them. So just kind of getting, I wish I could say there was a rule of thumb I know, because I don't, but I definitely know to ask a lot of questions when you're in the process of, you know, asking, you know, if you want an artist, if they want to work on a particular book with you, and trying to get a good feel of what they've got coming up and how they see it. Cause again, this is you know, I'm talking about going to issue 10, that's a 2-3 year commitment, almost, you know, depending on how fast the book gets produced. So man, it's a lot. I'm still learning a lot, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's one of the things that I wanted to ask you too. I mean, is this collection your first Kickstarter, the first time you've ever done a Kickstarter?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a collection. What do you foresee your schedule, like your release schedule being? Like, would it be another collection or will it be issue five? Like, how do you see your sort of like Kickstarter plan working out?
Yeah. Based on, I won't put anything hard in the sand as far as our next Kickstarter, but based on how this one goes, and yeah, I'm like, I get to learn about the whole experience this next 30 days, but based on how it goes, there's a chance that issue five could be Kickstartered. If not, I'll still release issue five, even if I don't do a Kickstarter for it. And then the next Kickstarter would probably be the volume two Kickstarter if I do it that way.
Got it.
I'm, you know, I'll post this Kickstarter, I'll really re-talk to the artists, really get, you know, start getting ready for the sprint on issue five and all of that. And so then I have a better gauge of kind of what the time save was going to feel like, what the speed of it's going to feel like. I definitely don't want to do a Kickstarter like 3 months from now. Like I want to give it some space. And so, yeah, we'll see. This one definitely will tell the story for that.
Did you ever think about like approaching a publisher? Was Kickstarter your first sort of thing? Like what, how did that sort of decision develop to go straight to Kickstarter?
Yeah. So I knew I wanted to do just the issue by issue when I first started. And I knew I wanted to do a volume one, you know, before I even wrote issue one script, that I was like, hey, that's the book that I'm going to really promote and try to get in stores and, you know, really take it as far as I can take it, because single issue, single floppy is just, it feels a bit tougher to try to push that across.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you look at the kind of the business side of it, you know, floppies, they're priced very competitively.
Is competitively the right word, my friend? Competitively is the right word, but anyway, go on. Yeah.
But so, you know, I feel like if you're going to get behind promoting a book, it would be a kind of a trade graphic novel style book. As far as getting with publishers, yeah, like I think that's something that the Kickstarter is going to tell me a lot. But yeah, that's something that I'll be heavily considering in the next 3 months. Yeah, I know I'm going to focus production wise on issue five, but from the business standpoint, yeah, I'll probably start reaching out and trying to see, you know, conversations of what it feels like. I'm fully prepared to just, you know, drive the ship and create the book on my own. But there's some stuff I learned that I would love to have, you know, somebody who had experience, edit experienced editor, somebody who is who's really done it to bring that to be a part of the teams. And if that meant working with a publisher, I'd go for it. If it meant just, bringing somebody in, I'd go for that as well. So just like, I'm going to look at the options and try to see what fits best.
Sure. Well, Jack Harris Jr., any final thoughts on Terminus Vale?
Yeah, man, Terminus Vale. Y'all got to check it out. If y'all love action, y'all love that kind of old school 90s feel comic book. Like I said, we talked about Image all day. That style of book. That's Terminus Vale action mystery.
Awesome.
July 10th.
Awesome.
Kickstarter.
Nice. Oh, yeah. So, we're talking now. So, tomorrow, as of when we're recording this. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This podcast will be up a little later in the week. So, that's good. Towards the beginning of your launch. So, oh, great. Well, as of the time that this is an audio podcast. As of the time that this episode of the podcast is up, this will be on Kickstarter. Look for Terminus Vale. Throw it your support. Jack Harris Jr., senior to me, but junior, thank you so much for sharing your time with me on the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast.
Oh, I appreciate it, Christian. Thank you, man.
Yeah, and you're welcome back anytime. I wish you the best of luck with the Kickstarter. I mean, I've read the first three, and this is just like you said, right up that action espionage, alley. So definitely check it out. Terminus Vale on Kickstarter. Jack Harris Jr., my name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on our website, parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are still on Facebook. We are still on Instagram. We are no longer on Twitter. I don't know what's happening with Blue Sky and Threads. Don't bother me. I'm a social media. Right now it's just Facebook and Instagram and our website. Thank you for listening. Please go check out Terminus Vale. Throw it some money. Jack Harris Jr., thank you so much for joining me. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time.